Hey everyone, it's Amy Lynn Durham and you're listening to Create Magic at Work. Create Magic at Work is on a mission to equip senior leaders with tools they need to be a true servant leader and actually understand what that means. Improve employee engagement, retain top talent, and transform your workplace culture to have less stress and drama. So let's start making magic. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another podcast episode of Create Magic at Work. Today, we have a very special guest for the show, Scott Rogerson. He's a veteran of retail management. He started his leadership career with Home Depot in a management training program in 1998. He has his bachelor's in economics from the University of Utah and master's of business from Westminster College. He's currently the vice president, AVP, for a large telecommunications company for the state of California. He has worked in Connecticut, New York, Utah, Hawaii, Nevada, and now California. He currently lives in Huntington Beach, and he has five children with his beautiful wife, Cindy, that they are taking care of. And if you don't mind my saying, Scott, possibly planning on transitioning to the empty nest piece here in a little bit, too. Yeah. Just so everybody knows, I know that I just read Scott's bio, but he and I have been friends for a really long time in leadership roles and have worked together for a really long time. And I really wanted to have Scott on the Create Magic at Work podcast because I have witnessed firsthand multiple times that Scott has stepped up as a servant leader. And that's a big theme of this podcast in order to help transform workplace culture and make it a positive place for people to work. So, Scott, thank you for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here, Amy. Good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So, I'm going to start off with a question I like to ask a lot of guests. As a leader, what are some ways that you... I want to start off with this because of the fact of what I just talked about. So, I'm going to let you take the wheel here. But what are some ways that you put your day-to-day concerns aside and operate from a place of higher motivation, higher self, big picture view as a leader in the workplace? And could you maybe share a specific example or two?
Higher self? I think the way to take yourself out of the day-to-day is to have a long-term strategy. And I think working for publicly traded companies has taught me that. I think too often leaders are doing what's called earnings management, where they're just trying to make a good quarter. And you know, if you take next week's sales and put them into this quarter, you can only do that for so many quarters before the street catches on. And so I think having that long-term, long-haul type of goal setting and everyday activity is important in order to have a lasting organization.
Okay.
I reference a book a lot of times by Stephen Covey called Principle-Centered Leadership. And in the book, he talks about competence and character. And I could say that moving around to a number of different organizations, I had to rely on character, or what I would say my values, as my competence grew over time. And what that also does is it allows me to be humble. So when I don't know everything, I got to rely on my subordinates and the people around me to educate me on things. And so I think having a set of core values or beliefs helps you assimilate to learning the competence of your role.
Yeah, that's really an insightful answer because you hit on two things that are actually SQ skill sets. One of them is awareness of your values and the hierarchy of those values. So that's really important, knowing what needs to be done. But then also you're kind of hitting on an EQ topic where you're understanding that your success is reliant on the people that you work with. And the people that frankly answer to you. And so creating connections with those people is super important. And yes, goal setting is important, but you were just saying you found that character, what was it you said again? You found that character over your knowledge base actually got you farther, right?
Yeah.
And that is, go ahead.
There's a lot of people that are excellent at their jobs because they've been there forever. And so their competence is really high. But you put them in a new environment, they may not fare so well. And I think that's why a lot of people are hesitant to move to new territories or to take on new roles.
Yeah. And that right there, we talk a lot in Create Magic at Work about how, you know, you mentioned Covey. He says SQ is the highest of all the intelligence. You're talking about people mistaking intellect for what is really important in leadership, which is EQ, which trumps IQ every day. How you can connect with people, how you can be self-aware of your emotions, have an emotional management strategy. How do you build connections with others? And oftentimes, I think what happens too in leadership is we mistake narcissistic qualities such as confidence, the sharp-dressed man, if you will, for leadership abilities, when in fact, the data is showing that exactly what you're saying, character, knowing your values, connecting with others, is what really gets you the results you need in the workplace. So on that note, my next question, what's your view on mistakes in the workplace?
I think mistakes are 100% owned by the leader. I think if you're delegating to someone, it's important to start small so that if they do screw up, the whole organization doesn't, you know, go up in smoke. And so, and the opposite of that is true. A lot of people don't delegate at all. They want to do everything on their own. They want to hold their cards tight. And then the end result is no one around them gets developed. I think it was Steve Jobs said, we hire smart people to tell us what to do. And part of that is also making sure that those people understand the company's culture, what may or may not fly here, giving them some coaching along the way so that when you delegate to someone, they're not totally on their own through the whole process. There's some check-ins. So make sure that, you know, if they do make a mistake, it's small and that they can be redirected.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you say, I'm bringing the SQ angle in with this, wouldn't you say that sometimes mistakes can lead to innovation? Have you ever seen that in your experience?
All the time. I mean, people are innately lazy, and so they want to do the bare minimum. And so I think a lot of times when you ask someone's input, they're going to give you an answer that's going to make their job easier, which nomenclature translation for lazy would be innovative. So if they can come up with something to cause less work, to be more efficient, I think that's what creates those synergies or that creativity.
Yeah. That's really good. I've never heard of innovation tied with laziness before, but I think you're onto something there.
I think it's Brian Tracy. He wrote a book on it. And it's essentially, that's the crux of the book. I don't want to steal his thunder.
No, you can. As long as you quote him, I'd love to share it with the listeners. But it makes sense because you want to do things easier. You want to create systems that, you know, everyone can work in an easier way. So, of course, you want feedback from everybody, no matter who they are, no matter what title they have, in order to do that. And that ties into innovation.
His book is called Something for Nothing.
That's really good.
And it's essentially overcoming laziness. So I think that book really sums up, you know, like a doorman is the one who invented the door opener, the little knob on the bottom that props the door open, things like that.
Did he invent himself out of a job with that one?
Yeah, I guess. So I don't know what additional tasks you got after that, but okay. I guess you got to be careful about how efficient you go.
All right. So tell me what you think your definition, this is all over our, you know, our leadership feeds on social media and everything like that. I want to hear what you as a leader think a compassionate leader is.
Probably the way I would define that is what it's not. And so I was 25 managing a Home Depot, 300 employees. And what I was most concerned about was the numbers. How am I going to hit these metrics? How am I going to hit my gross margin return on investment? How am I going to go after turns and keeping my inventory tight? How am I going to hit those sales numbers? And I didn't understand that all business is a relationship business. And so when employees would come to me with divorces or deaths in the family or whatever, you know, I was like, oh, well, the company will give you 2 days of bereavement and we'll get you back here on Wednesday. So I had no concept of having any compassion. Not only did I not have any concept of it, I couldn't identify it. So when someone was down in the dumps or someone's performance wasn't quite there, I thought they just didn't care. I thought, oh, this is someone I don't want on my team anymore, rather than Amy, who's going through a divorce on my team, or Amy, who just lost a loved one on my team. And I'd also say that this is something I didn't learn in college. Like there was no death, divorce, drugs, dice. There was no conversation about separating people's behaviors from the person. And so I learned that over the years, unfortunately, having some of those things happen to me. And as I overcame my own problems in my personal life or in the workforce, I was able to help others get over the hurdle. You know, if I didn't get a promotion, I'd be down in the dumps for a couple weeks. And so I knew what it felt like when someone else didn't get the promotion. And so I allowed them to have their moment, to be in pity town for a little while. I just wouldn't allow them to stay there. And so I'd say more than anything, my compassion as a leader has come through experience.
So what would you say to that 25-year-old person that's managing, you know, what would you say to 25-year-old Scott today? Because such we want to create, we want to create cultures that people thrive in the workplace, right? And I get it. Experience takes you there. But how can we talk to that 25-year-old Scott today? And what would you, you know, say to him?
It's kind of like training a puppy. And I was that puppy full of energy, making messes, not literally, but, you know, making some messes all around, nipping at people, biting, not literally, but I definitely snapped at some folks. And so through the years, you know, I think having a mentor or a trainer could definitely assist in that regard. Having someone to look up to, a rabbi, if you will, someone that you could say, hey, I got this thing I'm dealing with. Walk me through what you would do. And too often, it was my ego that would make my determinations or my decisions, not necessarily what was the best interest of all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you touched on something really important. You mentioned that throughout your college life, you were never, in all of your business studies, you know, you have your MBA, you were never taught EQ, right? I mean, you're basically saying you were never taught. I mean, it's not that you don't have it, but you never had a class on emotional intelligence for the workplace, right?
No. In fact, in my 30s, I was interviewing for an HR position. I'm not the most HR strong. And so I read Emotional Intelligence by Goleman. And that was the first time I was ever introduced to it. And I think that was the first time it was a tough read for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, this book is about me and my faults and how I'm not being able to perceive a lot of these things, and also how I'm being perceived by others. And so as a leader, you don't necessarily realize that you are conversation at the dinner table a lot of nights during the week, good and bad. And sometimes if you could be a fly on the wall, those dinner conversations, you know, is that what you want to be known for? Or how you want to leave your mark?
Yeah, that is absolutely, the data's there. We act on the way we think people perceive us, but it's really not the way they actually perceive us. And it's just such a missing piece in the workspace that a lot of, I guess what I'm wondering is, what would you say to those leaders now that think that EQ and definitely, you know, SQ, the boiler room management people, that think that it's woo-woo or go kumbaya by the fire and do this later? What are your thoughts on leaders in the workplace that shove all of that away?
I saw a lot more of it in the 80s and 90s. It was very Machiavellian, leading with fear. I think it still exists in organizations today, especially with young people. I think they like to be the boss. They like to be the leader. They like to flex their position. And I think that they should do something because Scott told them to, not because Scott, their director, told them to, or Scott, their manager, told them to. I think you have to earn that. And I think a lot of people, when they finally get that position, I think they think the position, earning the position, is what earned that respect.
Yeah. And we all know that just because you have a title doesn't make you a leader, right? You can be a leader without a title. Absolutely. And so let me go into the next question here. I ask everybody this because, as you know, and we both have really good senses of humor, and we have laughed a lot in our careers together. So there's a lot of catchphrases that are thrown around the corporate workspace. To the point where I think we even played bingo together on conference calls, or made fun of, you know, all the words that get thrown out there to just make you sound like you know what you're talking about and you're smart and you're a leader. So the one that I'm really passionate about right now is servant leadership. And I hear it a lot. And I hear people say you need to be a servant leader. And I wonder if they actually know what that is or what that means to them. I also see a lot of titles on, I'm not coming for anybody, I'm just food for thought here. I see a lot of titles on LinkedIn that say, you know, you're a change agent. I'm a change agent and I'm a servant leader. What does that mean? And so I'm asking everybody that comes on Create Magic at Work, what does servant leadership mean to you? And then we can get into the change agent next.
Sure. I read a lot of Ken Blanchard's books, The Woman and Manager. Mm-hmm. But the one that's really resonating is called The Leadership Pill. And I'll totally butcher the crux of the book. But it's essentially, if you take care of your employees will take care of the customers. And if the customers are taken care of, your shareholders are taken care of. And so that's a $50,000 MBA statement. Literally, if you were to just lead with that principle, take care of your employees, they take care of the customers, and the shareholders are then taken care of. And the way I take care of my employees is they are my customer. And so that's how I serve them. And to steal the Latin root of the word, when they call me, I'm customer service for whatever it is that, because first of all, to call a superior, boss, whatever title you want to call it, is intimidating. And so if I can make them feel like, hey, I'm going to help solve this problem, I'm going to use my title to flex and get your air conditioner turned back on in your store if it's hot, or get your windows cleaned, or to get you a new ink toner, whatever problems they have in the workplace, I feel like it's my job to keep them working and keep them happy. My mother grew up with a cleaning business. She had six boys, and we would all clean Shearson Lehman Brothers in the 80s. And so we developed a work ethic early on. And also, cleaning a toilet is not beneath me. And so if I go to a store and the bathroom's a mess, I'll make it a point to clean their bathroom. And then once they see, hey, my leader cleaned the bathroom, whatever I ask them after that, do this add-on sale, push this initiative, I'd rather do that than clean a toilet. And so I think that speaks volumes. And I usually go out of my way to set that as a tone that no job's beneath me.
Yeah, that's the tone you're setting. I love how you frame leadership and the higher you are as customer service to the people that you're serving. And you talked about servant leadership in that regard, and then how your employees will take care of their customers because you're taking care of your employees. But, you know, the next step is the shareholders are taken care of. With SQ, with servant leadership, we take it a step further to where we take responsibility for the ripple effect we send into the world. These businesses that operate, that use all of these resources on the planet, taking responsibility for that as well, and taking responsibility for humanity overall, right? And I think that that's literally going to be the future and the next step with these organizations. Because right now, while we're having this conversation, the Great Resignation is all over our newsfeed, right? People are leaving jobs. Sure. Companies are hiring at an all you everywhere I go. I'm in California, but everywhere I go, now hiring. The thing that's going to set apart where people are going to want to work are leaders that are operating in this servant leadership space, like you're describing. And the reason why is because somebody's going to pick to work for you who's operating from a servant leadership perspective versus a company that's not eventually, or they're going to show up to work and not work, which is the worst kind of employee you can have, right? The disengaged employee. So thoughts on that. And then also thoughts on the other catchphrase, I'm a change agent.
All right, it's a lot to unpack. So first, I'm always cognizant of what AI can do. And so if AI can give the direction of the company and can replace me by giving that direction, how can I replace that? And I love the Maya Angelou quote, which is, people will forget what you say or do, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And I haven't seen a robot or a computer yet that kind of gets people in the feels. And I think that happens by being perceptive to other humans. I think that takes human to human contact. Now, they may come out with a computer that can check the pupils dilating, and they may get there. But until we get to that point, if someone needs the day off for their kid's graduation, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that moment happens for them. Now, on the flip side, that person knew 18 years ago that their graduation was coming up. And so I just asked to have that mutual trust where, hey, give me a heads up to plan to make that graduation. It doesn't have to be 18 years in advance, but give me 30 days or a couple weeks. Telling me the day of isn't fair.
Right.
And so if I can go out of my way to make what matters most to the employee happen, I think I'm doing my job and delivering on that trust factor. The second part of your question was being a change agent. I think in any business, in order to stay nimble, in order to stay relevant, you've got to be able to embrace change. And that's the thing, is most people don't like change. And so I think by pushing your team, nudging them, and always being on the cutting edge of technology or the latest and greatest, and that could just be as simple as, hey, I read this book the other day, you guys should read it. You know, my subordinates or peers, they're familiar with Simon Sinek or, you know, the latest gurus. That way, at least we're aware of some of the things that are in the workplace that probably didn't exist 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to that point, just developing the people that work for you, that's a huge, the leadership development piece that you're hitting on is big, because that goes back to the servant leadership part where you're creating that ripple effect. So yeah, maybe after a few years of dedication to you, they move on in their life to something else, but they move on a better person because they worked for you, because you offered these leadership development opportunities, maybe not in a promotion. And by the way, not everybody maybe wants to be promoted, but maybe in developing them as a human being to be a better human in the world when you send them off, which is great. So I have one more question I love to ask leaders in the workplace, and it's about team build activities, because 2020 with COVID, Google reported a huge percentage increase in companies searching for team build activities because we got put into this new work from home space and hybrid workspaces and all of those things. And I find it interesting because that's what Create Magic at Work, the book, is all about, is there's skill building activities and EQ and SQ, right? Team builds. But for fun, I want to ask, what's the worst team build you've ever been a part of in the workplace? And then what's the best for leaders listening? I know my answer, wow. And we actually participated in one together, but I'm not going to say, I'm going to let you say.
All right. Probably the best. I'll start with the best. I think that's easier and top of mind right now. And I don't know how duplicatable it is. So if your listeners are hearing this, it'll probably get you fired. We had an area manager's mom pass away, and he had moved to California away from his friends and family. And he was very dedicated to his work family. And he took on a number of roles. He would do extra reporting and really gave us his all. And so we wanted to reciprocate and be there for him. So we took a road trip. This is like right out of Animal House. So we rented a 12-passenger van, and I was actually in Utah at the time. So the other managers rented this van at LAX. They picked me up, you know, 8 hours into Salt Lake City. We drove all the way out to Kansas City, and just the windshield time that we had of getting to know each other, you know, who liked what fast food? I'm not eating that. Get me two of those. Just the seeing behind the curtain of some of these people's lives, you know, what kind of flip-flops people wear, what kind of sweatshirts they wear, what brands they wear. Because too often you see everyone in a pair of khakis and a button-up shirt. And then, you know, to see someone wearing, I don't know what they call, I know the slang, but those white tank top t-shirts. Yeah, I know.
Yes.
And, you know, other people that don't wear them, or people that sleep in the nude, some people that sleep, you know, with a sweatsuit on. But
sleep
just
in the
being
nude.
Exposed
okay, there's
to
an HR
other.
Violation.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Being exposed to each other in an environment, and then being there for kind of the bigger picture was being there for that manager in that moment. And, you know, we saw the biggest egg in Colorado. We saw the world's largest thermometer. We stopped at the hot springs along the way. So we made an adventure out of it. And I would argue, you know, several of those people are in different organizations now. And I definitely know that they have a memory as a result of that trip. And I know that that manager was definitely appreciative when we showed at the viewing for his mom's passing and just being there for one another. I think that meant a lot.
Yeah. And those leaders that have moved on to other organizations will probably behave in a way that's more compassionate as a leader because of your example that you set. And I think what you're hitting on is just, I mean, it's so simple, right? It's connection, and it's authentic connection in the workplace. And it's just so interesting to me that a lot of leaders are afraid of that. And it's because, frankly, we have a lot of white males in leadership that are told as they grow up throughout their life, it is not okay to be vulnerable, to show emotion, to show connection. They're just comfortable reading profit and loss statements, financial data, and they don't want any of the connection. And the sad part about that is, to me anyway, they're missing out on, one, living this full life that you just described, this amazing trip where you experience this connection in your life. And then the other piece, hands down, the data showing they are missing out on profitability and productivity in the workplace if they are just being a selectively data-driven executive, right?
Well, it's funny. We work 9 to 5 for the most part, and you're with your family from like 5 to 9. So you get home, you eat a meal together, the kids watch TV, they're on iPads. You've probably got 2 hours of connection. But we'll go out of our way to attend all the big events in their lives. But yet we don't do the same in our work families. And so I think having those connections and memories, I think, can only help you as a leader.
Yeah. I have this section in my book called More Than S'mores. And I didn't even want to put it in there because I was like, this is so stupid and like easy. Like, I feel like everybody just knows this stuff. And it was exactly like your story. All my employees voted that was their number one favorite. We sat around a beach bonfire and shared our favorite motivational quotes, stories, talked about how our lives are, and had some cocktails and s'mores. And I'm just like, people are dying to connect with each other. And a lot of people feel isolated. And I've mentioned this before, but, you know, Harvard Business Review came out with a research article that said loneliness is the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day for healthcare costs in the United States. And we would talk about hidden costs at our workplace where we used to work together. The hidden cost of employee attrition. There's another hidden cost, right? Healthcare, employees not showing up to work, feeling isolated. Thank you for sharing that connecting story that is just perfect for Create Magic at Work. We are coming up on time. And with every guest, what I like to do is to end the show, I pull a journal prompt card for you from my journal prompt card deck that I authored. It's for the workplace and career. And this message is for you and for every listener that's listening in, no matter when this is. And it will have an affirmation for you for the workplace and then 2 questions for you to answer to end the show today. You ready, Scott? Send your energy over here.
Do I have to write this down or do you get to repeat it back?
I'm going to pull it. I already got your card coming out to me. So you got patience.
Ooh.
And the message for you and everyone listening is, I trust the timing of my life and know that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be right now. The first question for you to answer is, what seeds have I already planted that will lead to my future success?
You know, when you develop people around you and you go up another level, they're most likely going to follow. So it's almost like bringing your team along with you. And I know a lot of leaders that don't develop those around them. They go to the next level and then they're alone. And then they have to navigate those waters on their own. And I would say a lot of my success has been the relationships that I've developed throughout life. And that's personal as well as business. And so I would say that definitely seeds that I've planted are, I'm constantly giving time to my subordinates so that if I get tapped to go to another position or another level, or hell, even in my own job, I'm going to call on them or text them when my boss is asking me about an area that I have low competence in. And they're going to give me the info and I'm going to pass it on. And I don't think they view that as I'm using them. I think it's more of payback or reciprocation for what I've given them sometimes. And so it's definitely helped me out a lot.
Very good. Very smart. It's like the smart way to use EQ.
It's also patient because the short term is just to, like, my 25-year-old self, get promoted. Go fast, and you're there alone all the time. And so I think it also resonates with your patience card, patience card.
Agreed. Sorry. Definitely. And I was thinking when you were saying that you never know who you're interacting with, you know, throughout life, when they will come back. You just never know. I mean, that goes into the whole humanity thing. But okay, so final question. What work can you do today that will lead to prosperous outcomes in the future?
I'm part of a mentorship program right now, where, kind of like what you just said, you never know who's going to be who. And so the more authentic and real and honest the feedback I give that individual, the better their career can be shaped. And I'd say I'm at a point in my career where I'm not looking to go much further on. I've plateaued, if you will. I'm not saying I don't have additional career aspirations, but I don't have the same ones that I had in my 20s and 30s. I think I've come to a comfortable space, and I'm looking forward to the day where my subordinates manage me. And they're like, oh, I worked for Scott. He knows this and that. And so I guess I'd rather be put out to pasture by someone I raised than someone I didn't.
Okay, fair enough. I think that goes back to the whole ripple effect, right? Like, you feel a sense of your leadership responsibility of what you're leaving behind, which is huge. So thank you for sharing all of your insights with everyone today. Scott, how can people get a hold of you if they want to connect with you and network?
Email is probably the best. ScottPRogerson@gmail.com. That's RODGERSON. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn.
Yay, LinkedIn. I do my weekly workplace message with my journal prompt cards on LinkedIn. So we'll look for you on LinkedIn, and anyone's welcome to email Scott. He's one of the most responsive leaders I have ever worked with. He will not let your email go to the wayside. He's definitely a connector. So Scott, thank you for helping create magic at work, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Amy. It was great to see you.
Hi, everyone. Amy Lynn Durham here. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. All the show notes and links can be found at createmagicatwork.net. I hope you come back often and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Keep joining us for more exciting episodes where we help you transform workplace culture to systems that create less drama and stress and have high productivity and profitability. Please reach out to me on LinkedIn under Amy Lynn Durham, connect with me, and I hope we brought a little magic to your day. Sending magic to everyone. See you next time.